stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio in Los Angeles, California, you're listening to Sam in the Morning. If you would like to take part in the show this morning, dial 323-203-0815. And now your program host, Sam Hassan.
Good morning and welcome to the show. It's Tuesday, June 11th. We're back with you. It's kind of warm today, huh?
It is a beautiful day. Yeah. I'm so excited.
It's going to be really hot. I can already tell. And the coffee is making me sweat, too. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Hi, Mia.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know, man. It's like the weather is so strange here. One day it's nice. One day it's hot.
It's so strange. Yesterday and, it was almost a little, it was a little windy yesterday. Yeah. It was nice, but windy. I'm like, what is this?
I know, it gets windy all the time out here, and I don't know, especially in Sherman Oaks it does, and I don't like the wind. Do you like windy?
No.
No?
I have long hair. Of course I don't like the wind. Like, spent all this time curling it for nothing, just for it to fly in my face, get stuck in my lip gloss. No, thank you.
Oh, the problems that women have, I'm telling you.
Yes. Be thankful, Sam.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be a woman. I enjoy primping and getting ready.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, you gotta embrace.
Even if the wind does ruin it. Hope I'll get a photo beforehand.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta embrace your femininity, you know. And sometimes I wonder what it'd be like to be a woman. You know, I mean, it's quite different, I think, from being a man.
Yeah.
You know, different experience, right?
Yeah, what do you have to do when you get up in the morning? You gel your hair, brush your teeth, you're good to
and
go.
You're done, exactly. And, I would imagine, especially when you're beautiful and everything. Now, when you walk on the street and stuff, do people ever leave you alone, or do they always hit on you?
especially when I'm walking with another girlfriend, or there's like a group of us. Oh my gosh, look out. Really? It's like, oh man, all the time. Like even last night, you know, I was, we had to park a little far because it was a new place that we were going to, but it was Shane West's birthday party from, he was in Nikita. He's a good friend of mine. And we were walking to the place, you know, from, you know, where our car was parked, and, you know, and there's guys making catcalls, and we're just thinking, like, does this actually work for you?
Right.
Like, has a girl ever turned around and been like, oh my gosh, what did you just say? Yeah. Like, you just whistled at me? Oh, okay, what's your name? Like, let me go home with you. Yeah, right. I highly doubt that's ever happened.
I know. But I think they do this to show off to their friends and stuff, you know? That's
maybe.
What it is.
Yeah.
And, in some cultures it's more acceptable than others, you know? And so people bring it here with them, and it's just like, I know, I don't get it either, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you have that problem all the time, too, Sam.
Oh, yeah.
You're walking down the street.
All the friggin' time.
Ow, Sam! Look out!
It doesn't quite work the same way for guys, let me tell you, in case you didn't know. So that's interesting. But I guess you never feel alone, right? I mean, do people accost you all the time, like Starbucks, places like that and stuff?
Sometimes. It's just, you know, it depends on the day and, of course, what I'm wearing. You know, I'm going to, you know, like an audition or something, and I happen to be a little bit more, you know, primped up. It's just, you know, people see heels and a skirt, and it's like, whoa, what's going on there?
A hard on right away. Wow.
Yeah, so wardrobe definitely has a lot to do with it.
I think it does, you know, and I just, I always wonder because, you know, it's like, you know, I feel like, you know, like beautiful women and stuff are never being left alone, you know, and I wonder about this sometimes. It's like almost like being a celebrity, you know, I mean, people always look at you, people want to be with you and things like that. So it's similar in a way, I think, to being a celebrity.
It's actually, it's funny that we're talking about this, because I bring up quite a bit of this kind of subject in my piece. Uh-huh. So, and that's, oh my gosh, that's coming up. June 21st. Yes.
Oh, so you're doing another one.
Yes, piecesla.com.
Yeah, there you go. That's a show, Pieces of Ass, that you were on last month.
Yeah.
And it's going to be on this month as mm-hmm. well. Are you going to do the same routine or different this time?
It's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And there's some different girls and some new dancers. And, yeah, everything's changed around. So even if you've seen it before,
right.
you know, come back and see it again because it'll be totally different.
Right.
But still a really, really great show.
I know. I need to see it again because I missed all the dancing and everything. I just saw you and Andrea, and that was it. But I think then when I saw videos of it, there's a lot of like dancing and things like that too, right?
Yeah. We have dancers. They do a whole routine and they, you know.
I just have to have the patience to sit through the whole thing or stand through the whole thing. There's nowhere to sit there.
I know. It was so, so packed.
Yeah, it was packed, but it was nice. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be up June 21st, right?
June 21st, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a Friday night at Beecher's Madhouse in the Roosevelt Hotel.
Yeah, there you go. And you want to definitely catch Mia's bit there. It was pretty funny about Hooters.
but
you did say that they had a contest and you won it, or you were like third or something.
Oh, the pageant? Yeah.
They had a pageant for Hooters?
Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea like what a big deal all that was.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was you know, they had like little like regional pageants, mm-hmm. and so then by the time they have like the main pageant, I mean, there were the most girls in mine. Like, usually they do, like, 100. And in my year, they did 133.
Really?
So, yeah, from girls around the world. Germany, Guam, Guatemala, Spain, Brazil. Like,
really?
And they're
they have
all
Hooters
like,
out there, too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Even in the Virgin Islands now. We took a trip out there for a week to do some photo shoots. And we shot a little TV show for like, Fox or something. It was just, it was called Dream Girls. It was a blast. But, yeah, there's Hooters in like St. Thomas.
Like, wow.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
And it's funny that they try to make it into a family restaurant, you know? I mean, it just doesn't happen that way. You know?
I know.
I don't know any families that go there because they want to go there for the food, you know? Although I happen to go there, I love the chicken wings, although you made fun of the chicken wings,
right?
Yeah,
I've never actually had the chicken wings.
They're good.
Like, I've had the boneless ones, but I don't know. I just...
They're good. No. I actually get the plain ones. I don't like any sauce on it and stuff. And with beer, it's the best. You know? Yeah.
See, I'm a baby. I can't handle anything spicy. Like, burns my tongue.
That's
like,
what I'm saying.
Try the hot ones. I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
Mild or barbecue, I draw the line there.
Yeah. I know. And they do make it pretty hot sometimes. But just get it naked. You know, plain. It's really good that way.
That's how you do it?
Yeah.
Naked?
That's how I
naked
do
wings?
It.
Naked wings?
Naked wings. There you go. That's what they call them, don't they?
Yeah.
They call them that.
I think
so.
I think that might be when you... Oh, man. I sound like the worst Hooters girl ever now. Maybe that's when you don't have them, like, crispy or something. Or no, maybe you're right. Maybe, oh, gosh. All right, I better just stop there.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to dig myself into
good
a deeper hole.
Good thing you're still not working there. They'd fire your ass.
I know. Yeah, they would. Oops. Sorry, Hooters.
Yeah.
Still love you.
There you go. How long did you work there for?
I was there for a year.
Really?
For a full year, because I wanted to move out here sooner, but then it just kind of ended up where... You know, they had given me so much opportunity with the photo shoots and the traveling and, you know, the competitions, all that. I'm like, I can't just leave. It's not like I had a year contract with them, but I kind of felt like I did. You know, I'm like, I don't want to just, you know, leave these guys high and dry. I want to finish out a full year and do as much as I can and, you know,
cool.
get all that done. So.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm a very loyal person.
There you go. And now you're not in Hooters anymore. Now you move on in your life and that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I don't think they'd hire me at Hooters, do you think? Maybe with fake boobs or something.
Oh, God, they do, yeah. Picture Sam in the little orange shorts with the water balloons stuffed in his top. That would be a great Halloween costume for you.
Yeah, I know.
You should seriously consider
that
for this Halloween.
I once went as a woman. like a long time ago when I was in my 20s, 30s, I think.
Oh my gosh, and, you have to. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I had like a wing. I know. I don't know where it is, but I gotta find it.
You gotta post it on the website short so everyone
mini,
can see.
Because
they're all gonna be curious now.
A mini dress with fishnet stockings,
oh
high
my.
Heels. My God, man. I don't know how you guys
heels?
Do it. I don't know. I don't know how.
Wow,
I did it.
Wow, good for you for trying.
Yeah.
That's,
well,
that's
I didn't
huge.
Walk very far with it. Oh. Stayed at the party and stuff, you know. Wow,
oh,
that's pretty funny. Do you like Halloween?
I do.
Do you?
I do. It's
you
so much
up?
Fun. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't anymore. I find it's a holiday for kids, isn't it? I mean, they go trick-or-treating, you know? I don't know about adults putting on costumes, but...
It's just another excuse to have a crazy party.
That's true.
So, like, people make up holidays just to have a party, I feel like.
I know. But you never catch me dead going out in public... In a costume, you know, and people do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a big deal.
Oh, wow. Well, what are you going to do? The things that happen in life, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good times.
Well, so we're going to bring in our guest. We have a special guest in the studio that we actually asked to come back right after he was here the first time because we didn't even finish talking about what we were talking about. And it's Billy Hayes. Welcome to the show, Billy.
Thank you, Sam. Nice to be here.
You need to be closer to the mic.
Indeed.
There you go. For those of you who didn't listen last time, that was about 2 weeks ago, I think, that you were here. And
I was here, too. Yes. That's why I'm like super too. Excited yeah. that I'm here and he's back.
I
like,
love it.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It.
We can continue. Pick up where we left off, you know?
Sure. Actually, I'm thinking about dressing up as a woman, which I actually had a part in a film once where within the film there was a play and the guy in the play dressed up as a woman.
Uh-huh.
So they did me with the makeup and the eyelashes and the hair and the heels. And I spent all day dressed up. I used to run marathons. I was in marathon training back then
wow.
in shape. And by the end of the day, those heels, I could barely stand up. My legs hurt so bad. My eyes were in tears from all the makeup.
Man.
Thank God I'm not a woman.
Yeah.
Did they put fake eyelashes
they did.
On you?
They put these big eyelashes.
Whoa.
How did you tolerate that? I can
didn't.
Barely tolerate fake eyelashes.
My eyes were so irritated,
oh,
so red.
No.
And my legs hurt so bad. I was a marathon runner. Those high heels, I couldn't
yeah.
stand. But whatever you do, keep doing it because you look
yeah. But no, why would you use eyelashes? I mean, your eyelashes are pretty fine, no? I mean,
oh, it's all in the mascara. I have, like, microscopically thin baby eyelashes, but I finally found a really, really good mascara by Benefit. It's called They're Real.
Uh-huh.
And because they really
not.
Are. And people think all the time, like, oh, are those fake eyelashes? I'm like, no, it's just the mascara.
Yeah.
So
I'm not into the fake eyelashes, you know, and sometimes
it's
women
too much
get...
work being a woman. It's
yeah,
so
exactly.
Hard.
I can't
and
eat
sometimes
with them
they're
for
too
some
long,
reason.
You know?
Like, I could do everything with them, and I'm sort of tolerant of it. But once it's time to eat, for some reason, I cannot eat and wear fake eyelashes. I don't know if it's the, like, looking down or something. It sounds so weird, but I have to, like, tear them off.
Guys are too lazy to
it's the flutter.
All that stuff. Way too lazy, guys.
That's true. We are, you know? I mean,
and
just
we
throw
don't
on a shirt
usually
the
care,
jeans.
Right?
You know? Yeah.
I didn't care much when I was young. Nice thing about getting older, I really don't care now. I can't say shit on the air, can I?
You can
I
say,
love this
you can say whatever the
thank
fuck you want.
Thank you, Sam.
So, for those of you not familiar, Billy Hayes got in trouble in the 70s, and he had a movie based, well, a book. He wrote a book.
Midnight Express.
Midnight Express, and then the movie was made with Brad Davis.
Right.
And I just watched the film after, 30, 40 years that it came out, and...
it holds up.
It really does, you
it's
know.
Alan Park.
And Mia said she just saw it too. So
I watched it too. And I have like a whole new. I mean, I always respected you and your story when you hear the first time, but now I'm like looking at you like, whoa! like I don't even know what to say at this point. It was just mind blowing.
Alan
great
Parker's
film.
A brilliant director. He did a great job, and of course, Brad gave his heart and soul for the film.
Yeah, he did very well. I mean, his acting was amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, he put everything into it. Again, I'm the least objective of viewers. I have some problems with it, some of the changes that they made between my real story and so
on.
Right. Yeah, and you say they changed the whole ending, right?
Well, the ending, the escape was a big change, but I understand as a filmmaker myself now why they would change the ending. They would have to go from one prison where the whole film was to a new location because I escaped off an island in a rowboat in a storm.
Oh, wow.
And they'd have to go to a new location, reestablish, and then it's very expensive to shoot at night on the water. And then I ran through Turkey for 3 days, dyeing my hair and avoiding guards. swimming across the Maritsa River that separates Greece and Turkey.
Right.
That cost a lot of money to shoot. And it was a very low-budget film, actually, at the time. And the director, Alan Parker, when he showed me the movie, all by myself in a little screening room in Columbia in New York, I couldn't breathe at the end of the movie. Sweat was pouring. He said, well, Billy, what do you think? I said, I love the film. I miss my rowboat. What happened to my... Because literally escaping in this rowboat gave me back my life. I had my life literally in my hands with the rowing. And prison 24 hours a day says you're a loser, you're a loser, you're a loser. And eventually you believe it and you are. And that kind of gave me back my sense of self.
Right.
So I wanted the rowboat, but I understand as a filmmaker why they made the changes.
And we'll get to the escape in just a second. I wanted to give the background a little bit for those who didn't listen last time. And you try to get some hash out of Turkey. And at the time, they hadn't been searching people getting on planes. But this happened to be a day where they searched. There was
1970, October 7th, 1970.
And why were they searching at the time?
Because about a month earlier than that, the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, had hijacked the first of the jets and blown them up out in the Jordanian desert, which is the start of all the security that we have now.
Yeah. Right.
You, Mia, of course. She grew up in that. But before that, nobody searched you getting on an airplane. You could get on a plane 5 minutes before it left the ground with a chicken under your arm. Nobody would bother you. So I'd already made 3 smuggling trips. And stumbled back
so you were totally confident. I mean, you didn't even know
this
time
was going
to go
wrong. 22, 23 years old. I was invincible. Nothing could touch me. And I'd already made the first 3 trips. So I knew... piece of cake.
Yeah.
And I knew again, I was way too smart and good looking to ever get arrested. And I believe that. That's how stupid I was.
Right.
Actually, that I knew that the PLO had done this a month earlier. So the day before I was scheduled to fly out, I went out to the airport, watched dark shades, a hat pulled low, very cool and casual. And I watched people going through customs for the daily Pan Am flight number 1, nonstop, Istanbul to New York, every day the same time.
Right.
And there was nobody getting body searched, and there was no metal detectors. I figured, piece of cake. I head back into town to hook up with the English girl who was studying belly dancing in exotic Istanbul, who can't wait to show me her latest moves every day.
Right.
Instead of actually watching people get on the plane. Once again, my dick leading me astray. Next day when I show up, I breeze through customs. I got the two pounds of hash under my arm, 2 kilos actually of hash under my arms, under my sweater, right through customs. Nobody bothers us. And then they keep us in a little downstairs room for a while, which is a little odd, but again, no problem. James Bond is through customs and feeling fine. They put us on a bus to take us to the plane. Again, a little odd, but not a problem. And some old lady from Chicago is talking to me about her son in the Air Force and blah, blah, blah. The bus stops, and a Turkish cop steps on and looks down the aisle and says, "Women and children, stay on the bus. Men, exit by the rear door."
Wow.
And I look out the window at Turkish soldiers with rifles surrounding the plane and a long brown table set up in front of the boarding ramp. 2 cops on each side where apparently they're going to be searching people getting on the plane.
How did you not pass out right then and
there? I wanted to. I wanted to pass out. I wanted to die. There was nowhere to go.
And you couldn't walk back either.
I can't go back to the airport. I can't run away. I can't unstrap this 4 pounds of fucking hash taped to my butt. All I could do was try and balls it out and bluff my way onto the plane.
And you almost got through.
All of these men were funneling out the back door, and this big jumble of men are funneling around 2 lines on the side of the table, and I circled past the first cop, and I was stuffing a frisbee and my books back into my shoulder pack as I kind of sidled past the second cop, and I nod like, yeah, he already searched me. I actually get 1 foot up in the air towards the boarding ramp when this hand grabs my elbow.
So the movie was pretty
that
pretty
part of the movie was
that,
very
right?
accurate. That,
very
that
accurate.
Part of the film was very accurate.
I mean, to the part of the frisbee even.
Absolutely. No, the whole bust at the airport was very accurate. There's the weirdest part of the movie, everybody says, how did they just make up the madhouse, circling the wheel in the madhouse?
Right.
That was very accurate. That was the strangest place.
Wow.
Prison, Turkish prison is bad. The basement of the Bakırköy Mental Hospital, Section 12 for the criminally insane, that was the most, but that's the bottom of the birdcage.
And that's what we didn't talk about last time, and I saw in the movie that you sort of lost it there, which
I
can't blame
you. Well,
I
was there for a couple of weeks, and after a while, you know, I went there to convince them I was crazy, because there's an article in the Turkish law that says if you're judged to be crazy, legally crazy, they can't keep you in prison. But if that crazy, they don't let you on the street. They keep you in Bakırköy.
Right.
But I'd learned from the prison scuttlebutt, because that's all you talk about is escape, that Bakırköy was an easier place to escape from. So I went there to convince the doctors that I was nuts.
Oh,
I actually submitted, through the American Council, the draft report I'd gotten from the U.S. Army when I went to take my physical. This is Vietnam days. And prior to taking my physical, I had fasted for 2 days. I ate a chunk of hash the size of my thumb, and I told the Army shrink the absolute truth about everything I thought about life. And after about 20 minutes, he said, yes, that's enough. And he gave me a 1Y, psychologically unfit to serve in the United States Army. Don't call us. We'll call you. And I'm still waiting. So it takes me off to Bakukoi, and I get a chance to convince the doctors I'm crazy. I spent a couple of weeks there, and after a little while, I mean, that was so bizarre. The film was very accurate. That was, in fact, when I wrote the book, I wrote every single chapter of the book except chapter 9. I think it's still chapter 9, the madhouse. Because I just kept putting it off, putting it off. And when I finally sat down to write it, it came almost in one session, with virtually no editing afterwards.
Yeah, it's got to be so hard to revisit something like that, just to bring that up and you've tried to suppress it.
Well, that's interesting because I stepped off the plane to a press conference. That was on Friday. By Monday, I was talking to literary agents and I was writing the book, which was, you know, because of the timing and everything else. And I wanted to forget prison, not write about it. And yet the idea of having to literally every day go back and revisit brought all this stuff up, and I had some terrible dreams in the beginning, but it truly was cathartic. It, as the words stuck to the paper, the dreams kind of stuck with them, and it was a good process for me. I mean, I've been talking about this experience literally since the moment I stepped on American soil, and there was the press conference, and I'm still talking about
it. You go.
I think it's a good thing therapeutically to have.
Is it still, huh?
Yes, because now that the new stuff is happening, I went back and revisited all these letters. I used those letters to write Midnight Express, the first book. Those are letters never should have been a book, the Midnight Express letters. It was a way to get beyond the bars because I couldn't. But the letters could, and I wrote to my family, my friends, and my girlfriend mostly. And it's a whole series of letters from the first day through the last day. Actually, the first letter is to my folks.
Right.
Probably the hardest letter I've ever written in my life. It was in the locked up at the police station when I just gotten busted, telling them that I was arrested. That was the hardest thing I've ever
written.
And
reading this, I mean, you really felt like shit about yourself and for letting them down like that.
It cost my mom. I mean, when you hurt the people you love, that's bad enough. But when you hurt them and that hurt continues each day, every day, every night, my mom goes to sleep with pain in her heart for her son who's so far away. Mm-hmm. That tore me up. It still does.
Yeah.
You know, prison, people think the worst part of jail is the dirt and the violence. I can handle all that. The hard part is the pain I'm putting on my family, which I never considered.
A lot of guilt and stuff.
Of course. If there's any lesson in my life, kids, who, if you're listening out there, what you need to realize is actions have consequences. And I never considered that because I'm just running so fast and free. It was sex, drugs, rock and roll, the 60s, free love. I mean, I love that thing. And I never thought about what I was doing. I knew I was invincible. I mean, once I smuggled the first time and sold the hash and made a chunk of money and got laid a lot.
The first time you used a cast, right?
I wrapped it in a cast, taped the hash to my leg and dipped this plaster tape in water and wrapped this cast around it and clumped through customs at Istanbul and clumped through customs in New York. That's a whole long story. But once I did it, I knew I'm invincible. And then I did it a second time, did it a third time, and the fourth time I was arrested. Yeah. And suddenly, I mean, it shouldn't be suddenly, but that's how stupid I was. Suddenly I realized, wow, not only have I fucked up my own life, but now everybody who loves me is going to suffer with me.
Right.
And they did for 5 years. That's the hard part of jail. That's the lesson. If you need to learn anything, do what you like and know what you're doing. Knowing what you're doing means take responsibility for your actions because you have to live with them.
That's true. And you got to think of people around
you. Yes, and you should be thinking. But, you know, when you're young and dumb and you just...
Yeah.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
At the time,
There you go.
At the time, keywords.
But reading all these letters now, I can still see the idiot kid who got himself busted. The early letters, the first couple of letters, especially to my friends, they still got that bravado and that. And then they start to change as time and years and tears and weight. And I wrote a lot to my girlfriend. You know, I couldn't write to my family. When things got really heavy, they already were carrying the weight. So most of the heavy letters went to my girlfriend, Barbara. Mm. And she was an amazing woman. She traveled all around the world. She was like brilliant, sophisticated, Harvard Law. She just cut her nails down short one day and went out. She climbed mountains in Nepal. She was one of the first women racing in the Iditarod in Alaska, dog sleds. She hung beneath gliders, soaring across Swiss mountain valleys. And And she wrote to me about all these things. So I lived with her. I mean, I soared with her. Out beyond the weight of the walls, and I'd read her letters. I literally would touch the paper. Yeah. She touched it. It would help me. It would get me up and out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't blame you. And then that scene was hard. Was a difficult scene when she came to visit you.
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, and they made it. It's like I could feel like the hunger for a woman. You know, it's like they really made it look like real.
Prison is, I mean, it's a cold, hard, masculine world. And she was my touch of femininity in this cold world. And she had an energy and, you know, that male-female energetic. I mean, you can have sex with the same sex, with the opposite sex. You can fuck a post in the park. I mean, I read about this guy in Toronto where he's screwing a hole in a bench. It's like, splinters! Yeah, a hole in the bench. God. He was caught.
You see, men will stick it anywhere.
Men will do anything. Right? But that energy with a woman, which I desperately needed, I got that through her with her letters and, of course, with her visit. And, you know, she between the glass, she exposed her breasts in this room and such.
And that was
pretty,
very
that was
powerful.
A pretty accurate scene too.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You know, I mean, sometimes they change movies way too much. You know,
well, but they kept small the stuff. Part. They made again the biggest changes of the movie Midnight Express to my book and experience was the ending.
Okay, so we'll get to that in just a second. Mm-hmm. What I did want to bring up is your attempted escape. That was amazing. How when you guys went through the wall and then you So you thought you were going to freedom, and then suddenly you're just stuck. There's nowhere to go.
That scene cutting through the wall is based upon a short story I wrote in prison because they have catacombs and things beneath Istanbul. Istanbul is an ancient city, right?
Right.
It was Greek, and it was Constantinople. It was Byzantium. So they have all these underground catacombs. I actually made an escape with a friend cutting a bar in a window.
Oh,
and
really?
We were informed upon. He was informed upon, actually. And he got.
So who gives you like these little insights of information?
I was a reader. I knew everything about Istanbul before I ever went there. I'd always been fascinated with this is an ancient, mysterious city. It sits at the crossroads of Europe and Asia. I'm a reader. I'm an English major and a journalist. I read everything about Istanbul. I knew the city before I ever went there. At least I felt so. In fact, at the moment, I'm reading a whole series of books based in Istanbul, based upon a Turkish detective.
Really?
This is a woman named Barbara Nadal. She's got like 13 books all set there. And it's wonderful, and it keeps me literally in mind of the city and such. And I'm in the process of talking about the letters and promoting that. And I'm in rehearsal for a show. I'm doing a one-man play called Riding the Midnight Express, of course, which is me telling the same bullshit stories I've been telling for 40 years, but in a theatrical form. And we're in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year in August. So I'll be going
to
Scotland.
Nice.
And very we'll be doing the show and then hopefully taking it around. So I'm reading these books. Again, 30 years later, I'm back at Istanbul. The film is out. This Locked Up Abroad TV show that was done a few years back was a chance for me to tell the story in my own words. And that's what really started this whole new cycle. About every 30 years, I come around and make a big splash. I'm figuring when I'm in my 90s, I'm going to kick some old wrinkled butt back when I'm 90. I'm 66 now. I was, 23, 20, 30 or so when the first thing happened. So
yeah.
It's crazy for me that this all come back around.
Yeah, but sure.
I never sort of get away from it. I've done so many other things, and I've been an actor and a writer and a director, but I will always be known for Midnight Express, of course.
Yeah, for
sure. What about the food? What was that like when you got out and you tasted, like, real food again? Because I'm sure it was
the first thing I tasted when I got out. Well, yes and no. What they serve was pretty nasty, but you could buy stuff. It was this captive market. So outside vendors would come in with these big metal carts and selling fruit and yogurt and vegetables. And the interesting thing about... At least for me, for Turkish prison, American jails are so strictured. You know, 7 you wake up, 7:05 you piss, 7:10 you shit, 7:15 you're here tonight. They're not like that in Turkey. They're kind of loose and loosey-goosey.
They kind of don't give a shit.
That's it. They lock you in, they lock the door, and there's no psychological attempt at what all that crap is. You just get in, and then you have to deal with it.
Right.
And then here's the way it's supposed to be, and here's the way it really is. And you quickly have to learn the difference between the two, because it's not healthy to be in between.
Yeah.
But again, you know, for me, prison was the worst and the best thing that ever happened to me.
Really?
It taught me pressure. Pressure brings things out that you don't know about, like strengths and weaknesses. And I learned things in jail. I discovered things about myself that to this day are valuable.
Right.
I learned what was important, what was really important to me, what I wanted to live for, what I was willing to die for.
Right, exactly. So
eventually.
So you kept your hope and stuff that you'd be getting out, because when I think of this, I'm like, if I go to jail, I'm just killing myself, you know?
Well, it depends upon how long you're supposed to be in there or not.
Well, but then again, sentence, you were supposed to be there forever, right?
Yeah, eventually. They sent me to life, which the same judge who sentenced me to 4 years, originally I had a 4-year sentence, mm-hmm. and then just prior to going free, 54 days before I was going free, they changed it, High Court in Ankara. This is all based upon Richard Asshole Nixon and the ridiculous war on drugs, which we'll talk about, but they pressured foreign countries to increase their penalties. And one of the first people who bore the brunt of it were fools like me and other Americans.
They wanted to make an example
exactly,
out of you.
And they're pressuring these people to increase their drug penalties. The idiocy of this policy to this day, 50 years later, we see where it's at with marijuana. I mean, it was pot. Hashishes, pot, it's the same plant, different
but it
name.
Like chocolate bars.
Yes, because they press it down, they make it into powder, and they press it, and it's a different form, but it's THC. Right. It's literally the same plant.
Right.
Okay.
Better hash. Back then, the hash in Istanbul was really good, and most of the pot, most of the hash here, marijuana here, was weak. Now, of course, you've gotten these old botany studies and all these geeks fermenting the plants. And now the pot is wonderful here. Yeah. And in California, it's almost legal. In Washington, Colorado, it's legal. And it will be legal soon.
Yeah.
Because,
and let's get to that. Yeah. I just want to get the escape part because we never got to that.
Sure.
And so in the movie, it's like I couldn't believe this. I mean, it's like in the movie, you just kind of walk out of there.
Kill the guard, butt his guard, the bad guard, which I didn't do, by the way. That guard was actually
Was he real? I mean,
oh, he was very... most guards in the prison were just guys doing a very nasty job. They're locked in 12 hours a day with the prisoners. There's just as much violence around them.
Right.
They hardly made any money, which is why they were so open to bribes. Everything worked on the bakshish system.
Oh,
but this guard, the big guy... he was brutal. He was a sadist. He liked to hurt people.
Right.
He would walk in the room and everybody would do that one of those POW stances where you look down and you don't want to send out any vibration because you don't want this guy picking you for whatever he's here for. You just.
Right.
But most of the guards weren't like that. He was accurately portrayed. Again, my problem with the movie, you don't see any good Turks. You don't see any good guard. All you see is this brutality.
Right.
That's not valid to my experience or certainly to Turkey.
I mean, really? So some people were okay, you're saying?
Well,
because
some guards
people...
were okay to a degree. I mean, they're prison guards, so
what
is their mentality? But they weren't brutal like this guy. Mm. It wasn't... And people say, oh, they tortured you. No. I got beaten. That's different. I got a fight the first night with some guy.
Yeah.
One thing led to another. And, you know, I'm not real big, but I used to be very fast and nasty, and I did all this martial arts shit, and I am scared shitless. And this guy, next thing I know, bang, I've hit him, and he's down. His nose is bleeding. He's a trustee. The guards come rushing in. They grab me and drag me out. And I'm trying to explain to them. I don't speak Turkish. They don't speak English. You know, he woke me up. He hit me. He started to first. All they know is new guy, first night in a fight.
Right.
Lesson needs to be taught. And how they do that in Turkey and a lot of Middle Eastern countries, they wrap a rope around your ankles and lift your feet up and beat your feet with a stick. It's called falaka. Very effective.
Wow.
Turns out, I mean, they're beating me and hitting my hands and my feet, and I'm screaming and twisting. But it turns out it was not a very bad beating. They didn't break any bones. That's the line. If they don't break bones, it's not a bad beating, but it's a very effective lesson.
Wow.
But for me, the good thing was that Amin, this trustee guy, walked around the prison for 2 weeks with this big black eye and a swollen face. So everybody knew what happened to him. Oh, that new guy, that Willie, that guy, that little skinny blonde guy. He did that. It helped my reputation in jail because people are looking for somebody to pick.
Nobody wanted to mess with you.
Well, not so much nobody, but if you want to pick on somebody, find somebody easier. If they see, well, Jesus, if he beats Z it up like that, let's pick on this guy. He might, you know, he might be easier. It just helps in jail. Everything in jail is. It's the image you have. I mean, if you're a victim on the outside, you will definitely be a victim on the inside. You're not. You're not. You're constantly tested, but it's okay. You know. Again, I could handle the violence part.
Right.
I couldn't handle the other part.
Yeah.
My family that suffered. And I couldn't do anything about it either. That's what was so frustrating.
Right. So now let's get to the point of, so you were in the mental hospital because you sort of like freaked out. You lost
Well, I went there to convince them that I was crazy so I could stay there to escape.
Right.
And while I was there, I got very close to freaking out because everything around me was crazy. And this one, you know, I used to walk the wheel down in the basement. And one day this weird little guy, Ibrahim, with these big eyes, all red-veined eyes, walks in next to me and he starts talking to me in perfect English how we all come from the factory. And sometimes the factory makes bad machines, but the bad machines don't know they're bad machines. And that's why the factory puts them here. I'm ignoring this guy. Every time I turn around, Ibrahim is there. William. You think you know what you're doing, but you don't. You think you'll get out of here, but you won't. It's like, I got day after day after day. And eventually, this fucker starts to get to me in a way. He says, "When William, You think you'll leave here? You never will. You never will. You know, shut the fuck up, you lunatic. I mean, does this wacko know something I don't know? I have made mistakes before.
I love that part of the movie when you turn around and you're like, I am from the factory.
I snapped on him. I needed something. I said, I know all about the factory because I'm from the factory. They sent me here to check up on you.
You're the bad machine.
And he freezes and his eyes get really wide and he scurries under this wooden bench and he never talks to me again. And then one day they chain me up and they take me back to the prison. And I get back there and I tell the guys, oh, how good it is to be back here. And they look at me like, what are you talking about? Good to be here. Again, perspective. You don't know what you have till you lose it. They hadn't been to Bakekoi. Going back to the prison, it's like, oh, how nice it is to be back. I didn't appreciate anything in life. I took it all for granted. I was a child of the 60s. I protested Vietnam. Everything wrong with America, Vietnam and civil rights and women's rights. And I took everything good about America for granted. And then I lost it all in an instant. Yeah. People, places, food, culture, law, language, all gone. Everything changed, and I had to change with it. And I don't like change, but I discovered I'm good at it. I'm adaptable. It's one of, again, one of the things I've learned that was valuable in jail to me that I still hold on to now.
Yeah, sounds cool. So tell us a little bit about the escape. So how did that happen? How did it? How the hell do you get out of the building?
After my original sentence was changed to 30 years, officially stamped by the High Court
for just fucking. I mean,
for pot.
So life sentence.
4 years to
4 years
life,
to a life sentence,
then to
and then the judge was able to lower the life sentence to 30 years.
Okay.
Thank you. I guess 30 years, but that's I had the escape switch on virtually all the way through, and then my second trip back to the madhouse, my friend was coming, my oldest friend in the world, Norman, was coming to help me escape. Because I needed somebody on the outside. I could get out of the madhouse, climb over the wall, but I needed papers and false passports and cars and clothes. So he was coming to help me escape. And he'd gone back to Mannheim, Germany. He was working in the John Deere tractor factory, making good money, arranging with the Germans to get a car, to get false passports and all this stuff. And one day a telegram arrived from my dad saying that Norman was found dead in his hotel room in Mannheim, Germany, with a big bayonet through his chest.
Wow.
He was boffing the wife of this American army. Norman was one of those guys. Women just couldn't leave him alone. And he just, again, stepped in the wrong place, and he was found dead, which pretty much my whole world collapsed. That was probably the lowest point in
jail. Was your hope there.
That was my hope. That was my friend. Not only have I fucked up my own life, not only am I still causing daily pain to all the people who love me now, my best friend is dead because he came to help me escape. And I just, I went into such a funk and such a place that I didn't even write home for months and months. And then one day I just sort of pulled out of it. I decided it's my karma to just finish my sentence, to do my time, to learn my lesson, and I turned the escape switch off, which had been on from the airport when I was standing there getting busted. And that changed everything. That made all the, I'm literally seeing prison with different eyes. I got into my yoga so intensely, which, you know, saved me in jail. And I was learning things. I had this little Japanese guy, the calmest guy in prison, and he's trying to teach me about living in the moment. He's telling me, you just take care each little minute, each little minute. And then the, supposedly, I guess, the hours and the years take care of themselves. But it's so hard to learn. And I learned about William James, college philosophy. William James is the pragmatist. William James said, people can alter their lives by altering their attitudes. Wow. I never got that until now. And then suddenly I realized I altered my attitude. And I began to enjoy prison. How strange is that? I was just living in the moment. I was connected to the sheer bliss that we should all be aware of all the time. It was existence. We're alive.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's so fucking amazing. Just think, I was really, it was a wonderful time for me, and I learned stuff about myself.
That's a huge revelation.
Well, for me it was. I needed to get down to the depths of prison to learn that shit. I discovered my reason for being, which is simply to love. I didn't know that, but when I discovered it, it changed everything for me. It just, but you know, all of this good, wonderful metaphysical stuff that you learn, and it's the karmic lessons, and that's all great. That's easy to say when you're feeling good, which I was, and I'm counting the days till I go free. Suddenly, they changed my sentence. My whole world turns over, and all of these wonderful lessons I've learned are very sorely tested, because now, instead of going free and sending out light and love and have birds land on my shoulders, I'm looking at the rest of my life in jail. So yeah. The escape switch went back on. I got myself transferred to this other prison. Now I'm eligible because I'm officially there. Mm-hmm. It's called Imrali. It's Imrali Island Prison. It's out in the Sea of Marmara, about 17 miles off the coast of Asia Minor. And I've learned again from prison scuttlebutt, it's a half-open island. We work there during the day. The prisoners carry stuff up from the boats and they do a canning factory. And you get to walk around this little village during the day. Locked down at night, there's still guards, there's, you know, out on the end of the dock, there's a little right. searchlight and such, but the sea is considered to be the wall around the prison.
Right.
So I got transferred there because I was eligible to do it, and because the American Council intervened for me with the Turkish courts, because there was a prisoner exchange treaty, a treaty that was in being enacted. In fact, my lawyers back in New York began this. It took another 5 years to eventually get it done, but it's still in place today. It's called literally the Prisoner Exchange Treaty, where Americans in foreign prisons can return home to serve their sentences, and foreign nationals can be sent back. Oh. I'm not waiting for this. I mean, I get transferred to the island. I'm telling everybody about this treaty, which is actually happening. The American Council talked to the Turks. You know, they talked about how my mental condition, which I've been talking about from the beginning, is getting even worse now because of this sudden 30-year reversal of fortune. So it seemed logical. And the fact that the U.S. is arranging to transfer me back home, again, took another 5 years, but it sounded like it was happening. Mm-hmm. So when I got to the island, I told them I'm the only foreign prisoner on the island. And I speak good Turkish. I mean, not good, but very good communicate.
Yeah.
And so I have a curiosity piece. And everybody on the island, they'd heard, yeah, the American government is going to transfer me back, but none of them could believe that I'd gotten 30 years for 2 fucking kilos of hash.
Yeah.
Join the club. Yes. But it made it easier to get around the island. I could get past boats from the mainland, 17 miles away, come and bring produce, and then we unload them. I was carrying these 50-kilo sacks of beans up
right.
to the factory, and we do canning work. At the end of the day, you're locked down at night for a bed count, and you're counted in the morning. But easy to get past the night bed count. Different reasons.
Uh-huh.
The couple of accountant guys sit in this little shed doing night work on a machine while a bunch of kapadais, this is like the big prisoner gangsters,
uh-huh.
sit around after night count and drink rocky and smoke joints and play dominoes. These gangster prisoners really run the jail. So as soon as I got there, I know my way around. I find the baddest ass in the jail. He runs the place. Became friends with him, and he arranged that I could be in the accounting shed at night, so I've gotten past the night bed check. The boats from the mainland bringing the produce over, we unload the boats, then they have to leave. They're not
right.
allowed to spend the night in the harbor because it's a prison island. Except, as I discovered one day, when a storm at sea makes it so rough that they can't leave, so they anchor there. And
wow.
each little wooden boat has a little wooden dinghy tied behind it. That's my way. I mean, I used to be a lifeguard and a surfer. I'm a real good swimmer.
Yeah.
At first, I thought about swimming, but 17 miles, especially after 5 years in jail, that's a long ways to swim.
Yeah, right.
But these little wooden dinghies. So I waited till actually the morning of October 2nd, 1975. I wake up and the storm is brewing. And by the time I got down the wet cobblestones to the harbor, the early boats that had just come in, they're being unloaded, but they're anchoring down. They're not. The wind is blowing. I knew that was the day. So I was able to go to the accounting shed and then sneak out of there. And instead of going back to the barracks, down the cobblestones to the harbor, and I hid in this little cement vat where we used to keep tomato paste. And then I was able to escape over at the top of that, down onto the beach and out to a little rowboat. And
wow.
I could talk for hours. I don't know how much time you got. Stop me when you heard enough. And I took the little rowboat and I used that to row to the Turkish mainland and then spent all day making my way back to a larger town.
And that was during the storm?
Oh, no. I rowed during the storm. It was about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night probably, because I waited till everybody was done. And the storm was still blowing. And then I made my way down to the beach because the boats are all rocking. And that's the best way out because now the wind is blowing. And I was able to swim out to a little rowboat, and pull myself over, and take the knife that I'd gotten from the accounting shed. My hands are so numb I can barely do it, and I'm cutting the rope on this little rowboat, and it's banging and twisting, and suddenly I hear whack, and this wooden hatch opens in the boat above me, and this Turkish fisherman leans out, and he hocks right over my head into the water. If he looks down, I'm dead. And then whack, I hear the hatch go again, and I start cutting on the rope, and it won't cut. I'm ready to gnaw this fucker apart with my teeth.
Uh-huh.
And then it snaps, and the boat starts rocking. But, you know, eventually I get it together, and they don't have oarlocks on Turkish boats. I discover they've got a wooden peg and a big pretzel of rope around the oar, and somehow you hook it over and you know, if I'm in Central Park in New York on a Sunday, I figured out I'm drifting back towards the rocks and the guards,
right.
But I finally figure it out and start pulling and kind of get into the rhythm, and I was able to row out past the last of the boats. When I look up, I realize I'm past the last of the boats, and I'm past the edge of the island, and I'm out of the harbor and I'm into the open sea, beyond the bounds, for the first time in 5 years. Yeah. I'm free. This
amazing.
Is
amazing.
It's an incredible feeling.
And you were by yourself. You didn't take anybody with you.
No. It got down to if you want it done right, you have to do it yourself. Yeah. And I'm so desperate. Mm-hmm. At this point, it was like either I'm free or I'm dead.
Yeah.
But no more jail. I just...
Yeah. Prison, I don't blame you.
Prison breaks you, or you get hard in ways that you can't change, or you get broken in ways that you can't fix. And I was something was about to happen to me that, so I needed to get out. And you know, again, having these oars, I literally had my life in my hands, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And
right.
I 5 years, you're a loser, you're a loser. That's what breaks you in jail. Your mind just goes. And to take my life back, it gave me back my self-esteem.
Wow. So you still had that desire to live, you know?
Shit, I mean, more than ever, more than ever.
It,
and at this point, I'm so desperate. And then I just got lucky. When I'm hot, I'm really hot. When I'm not, I'm really not. I just got so lucky. There were so many instances in the next 3 days of rowing to the mainland and then scurrying back through Turkey and Istanbul. I dyed my hair. I have this blonde hair. I had a big blonde mustache back then. And, you know, I'm wandering the streets. I went to a hotel where a friend of mine who'd been in prison, Wolfgang, and he spoke terrific Turkish. He'd become Muslim. He was working in a hotel as assistant manager, and he owed me a really big favor. I saved him from a really bad beating one time in jail. So I figured I'd get to the hotel. Wolfie will hide me. We'll get false papers. I'll stay there for a week, and then I'll just leave. And I get to the hotel, and the manager says, Wolfgang, oh, yeah, no, you missed him. He left yesterday for Afghanistan.
That's the end
of my plan. I wanted to cry. I wanted to sit down and cry.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help, right? I've been doing it for 5 years.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we can read the rest of it in your book. The book is Midnight Express Letters.
The Midnight Express Letters, Amazon. You can get it as print or, you know, it's funny because the first letter in letters is the letter home to my parents, the hardest letter ever written. And the last letter in the book is a letter written to my dad 2 days before I escaped off the island saying, you know, things are coming together. As soon as the weather factor comes, and I'd say, you know, by the time you get this, I may be gone, which was true.
Wow.
So that's the bookends of
and
letters.
It's amazing they even let you send letters and receive letters. You know, they didn't have to.
They need post. But it was pretty easy. We talked in code. You know, we'd write about baseball games. And my dad, we talk about Willie Mays, who used to be a baseball player. Willie Mays is leaning off third. He was famous for stealing home. So we'd talk about that. And getting letters in, they didn't really check them too much because there were like 18 or 20 different nationalities in the tourist cell block.
That's true.
They would just see if there was contraband.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that's a story. We only have about a few minutes, and you were outspoken about marijuana and the legalization of it.
Yeah.
So where do you think this country is going? I mean, we just had two states legalize it for recreational use.
I think it's Voltaire, one of the French philosophers. Nothing is as powerful as an idea whose time has come. It's time.
Yeah.
The realization that you're not helping 20-year-old kids putting them in prison for pot. You're not helping them. Whether you like or don't like drugs, well, let's start by defining what are drugs. Alcohol and tobacco are the worst drugs. They kill more people. Alcohol is advertised on every sports show, and it's the biggest problem you have among teenagers. It's not pot.
Right.
Prescription pills are the biggest problem. Let's get real. Let's stop the hypocrisy. This whole war on drugs is idiotic. It costs this nation. You can talk about it from a liberal, humane side. You can talk about it from a conservative economic side. We're wasting so much money on prisons, on putting people in jail. You know what it costs to incarcerate someone every year? They're not working. Yeah. They're not putting into society.
For freaking a couple seeds of marijuana.
Well,
you
that's
know?
The I point. Mean, it's hypocritical. Yeah. This whole thing started because DuPont, the chemical industry, and William Randolph Hearst, who had the papers and the trees, the timber industry, didn't want hemp. The plant that grows, we've used hemp for 10,000 years. Mm. It's been banned since 1937 because these two guys didn't want hemp grown industrially to compete with the timber industry, which it could eliminate.
You can use hemp for so much.
So many things, pharmaceutical things, for trees, everything. I mean, the Constitution was written on hemp. The sails of the Mayflower were made of hemp. It's ridiculous that it got banned, and it shouldn't be. It should be legal. Are there problems with legalizing all drugs? Of course, but you deal with them in a rational way. You have treatment centers for people. You educate kids. When you tell kids, if you smoke a joint, next thing you know, you're going to be doing meth, your teeth are falling out, and you're going to be injecting heroin.
Right, saying, and then kids, it's a gateway drug.
Exactly. And then kids smoke it, and they realize that's not true, so they stop believing everything else. And you need to be aware that meth will rot your fucking brain and your teeth. And heroin is not good for you. But should you be put in prison for using them? No. You need a place to learn. You need a place to rehabilitate.
Right.
And you need to stop clogging our prisons, corrupting our legal system, corrupting our police system, and wasting all this money. California right now, illegal pot. How much money is being wasted that could be taxed? Well, it's beginning to now.
So absolutely.
It's happening. It's happening. It's still...
Most people just use it for like a creative purpose out here. You know, it doesn't make them a bad person.
If you smoke a joint and you write a script, or it's one thing. If you have to get up every morning and have three joints before you go to school, you might have a problem.
Yeah.
If you drink a beer watching a baseball game, that's fine. If you drink a six-pack before you go to class, you got a problem.
Exactly.
It's not the beer. It's
like
not
anything.
The it's not the marijuana. It's the problem. You're just covering it with these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But don't put people in jail for smoking a joint. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, there's a problem that comes up, and that is because THC stays in your body for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So now, if they stop you, for example, they'll find THC even if you smoked two weeks ago, which obviously you're not high anymore.
Right.
And with alcohol, alcohol, it's pretty straight. You know, if you test negative, you're drunk. But with marijuana, it's not like that. So would they arrest you or should they not arrest you?
There are a lot
of
issues that need to be determined, but they need to be spoken about and discussed honestly. And what amount of THC in your body is impairing your vision such that if you're in a car, if you're drunk in a car and you have 0.08 and you have an accident, you're drunk. Well, is there a marijuana equivalent?
Exactly.
That needs to be determined.
Yeah.
It hasn't been.
Exactly. It affects people differently. You know,
and you know what? You want advice. Don't drink alcohol. Don't smoke pot. Run marathons and do yoga.
Yeah.
That's what I do. But at the same time, you shouldn't be put in jail if you smoke pot. It's crazy.
Yeah, definitely is. And definitely we opened up a conversation here. And we are out of time again. I don't know, when you come in here, the time flies.
My pleasure. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you letting me plug my book and getting it out there. And
of course,
people
everybody
really want to know.
Such a fascinating
If they want
to
know what it feels like to really be inside prison, read the Midnight Express letters, because that's the inside. Again, that was never meant to be a book. That's just letters to...
And I read about half of it so far, and it's pretty powerful.
Thank you.
It's very good.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, everybody. Mia, thank you.
Thank you.
As always, thanks, everybody, for listening.
Sam. Thanks,
and
Mia.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Right. You have been listening to Sam in the Morning, which airs Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you would like to get in touch with the show or to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please email sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say... what we want.